right, welcome everyone to the second episode of The Podcast Dude. My name is Aaron Dowd, and today I'm going to be talking about podcasting equipment. And there are a lot of things that you'll need to buy to podcast. But first off, I wanted to say I got a couple of questions last week that I wanted to talk about first. And Sarah had asked, what is the level of sound quality that you consider the minimum to start? Justin had asked, what's the single most common mistake people make when starting a new podcast? And Corey asked, is it important to just get started and iterate or get started right? So my thoughts on this, the very first thing and the most important thing is the microphone. You need to have a good microphone. And there's a few reasons this is important. First, it's a first impression. When someone turns on your podcast, they're going to hear you speaking, they're going to hear what you recorded, and that gives them an impression about who you are and how much you care about the podcast. Now, I kind of tend to break up people into two camps when it comes to podcast listeners. There's people that have been listening to podcasts for a while. They have an idea about the shows they like. They probably listen to a lot of shows. And then there's people that are maybe new to it because of the rise of shows like Serial, and they're just kind of getting into it from hearing about it. But either way, there are tons and tons of shows. And to stand out from the huge number of shows out there, you not only have to provide great content, but you also have to sound really good. And good sound quality will show your listeners that you take podcasting seriously, which means they will take you seriously, and they'll be more likely to invest time listening to you. Now, like I said, you do also have to provide great content, and I talked a lot about that in the previous episode with Sean McCabe, shout out. But a great microphone is really, really important, and it makes your show easier to listen to. And good mics require less post-production, and many recordings can be improved with post-production, and that's like noise removal, EQ, compression, things like that. But a great microphone will require less post-production. And I do recommend that anyone getting into podcasting, if you're going to be producing your own show, you have two options. You can hire someone to handle it for you. And that's what I do, actually, almost full-time. I fix up audio recordings. I do editing. But you can also spend just a little bit of time learning the basics of EQ and compression, post-production, and you can do a pretty good job with a great mic. And cheaper microphones just don't sound as good. They often have a harsher high end. They sound brittle and they don't have a good low end or the bass frequencies. So I don't recommend going cheap. And, you know, a lot of people ask, what's the minimum? What's the minimum I can do? But I don't want you to do the minimum. I don't want you to get the cheapest mic that you can afford right now. I want you to think about doing a great job with your show. If you're going to spend time on it, do it right and get a good microphone. And I love this quote. I don't know who said it originally, but good enough is the enemy of great. So today I am going to be talking about different price ranges, because I do understand that not everybody can spend $800 on a podcasting setup. That's not realistic. When I started on a $200 USB condenser mic. It was a Shure mic, but I wish that I had invested in a great mic. And the microphone I'm currently using is a Shure SM7B. So we'll be getting into that more here in a little bit. But if you only have a small budget, what I would actually recommend you do is check out Guitar Center's used gear section online, or your local music store if you don't live in the States, or somewhere where you can get used gear online. But eBay, things like that. Used gear is usually pretty good. I bought this microphone used. I bought my interface used. I have a DBX preprocessor that I bought used. So save your receipts in case anything doesn't work. But all right, so microphones. And the most common question I get when people ask me about microphone recommendations is, should I get a USB mic or should I get an XLR mic? If you're just starting out and you want to spend the bare minimum, which, like I said, I don't think you should do, but if you just want to start out and spend the bare minimum, there's a USB mic called the Blue Yeti that you can get pretty decent sound quality on. You'll need to get a pop filter. but it'll sound okay. Not great, but okay. The step up from that, the one that actually sounds pretty good is the Rode Podcaster. And those run about $199 on average. You also need to buy a stand with that. And the other thing about microphones you'll need to know, and this applies for both USB and XLR microphones, which are the more traditional microphones that you plug a cable into and then plug it into an interface or a mixer. The other thing you need to know about microphones, regardless of whether they're USB or XLR, is that there are, for podcasting anyways, there are generally two different types of microphones, dynamic and condenser. And I get asked this question a lot too. Should I get a dynamic mic? Should I get a condenser mic? What's the difference? And the difference mainly is that the dynamic mic picks up more mid-range warmth and it has better off-microphone noise rejection. So it's not going to pick up as much of the room or sounds happening in the background. The condensers will give you higher detail. They're a little bit more sensitive. If you have a good room for recording and you're familiar with using mics, then you can arguably get better sound quality out of a condenser microphone. But for most people who are recording in their offices or in their spare bedroom like mine, a dynamic microphone is generally going to be better for podcasting. So I went over the two USB mics that I think are good enough for podcasting, and that's the Rode Podcaster and the Blue Yeti. But I personally love and recommend XLR mics for podcasting. And I told you earlier, the microphone I'm using right now is the Shure SM7B. Now, this is a great mic. It runs about $349 new, and I think I paid about $250 used. And what can I say? This is the mic that everyone on the Sean West Network uses. It sounds great. Michael Jackson used it for recording the vocals for the Thriller album, and that's the best-selling record of all time, so I'd say it's good enough for podcasting, and it's just a great value for the price. Another great XLR microphone is the Heil PR40. A lot of podcasters use this one. It runs about $327 new. And from what I've heard, it's a little bit brighter. Some people will say that the Shure SM7B sounds a little bit darker, doesn't have as much presence in the high end. And you can adjust that in post-production as well, but that's just something to be aware of. It's also a great mic. Now, one of the better affordable setups that I really like is an SM57, or Shure SM57, or a Shure SM58, paired with just a very simple interface. And I'll talk about interfaces here in a minute. But if you go with an XLR mic, you'll need to get an interface. And for roughly $200, you can get an affordable interface and an SM57. You combine that with a pop filter, and you've actually got a great sounding recording setup there. And I recommended that for one of my clients. I was very, very happy with the results they got out of it. They don't know much about audio, but they plugged the 58 into the interface, set the gain right, used a pop filter, and they sound really, really good. So that's a good affordable option. If you're looking to spend just a little bit more than a cheaper USB microphone, I like that setup. So I wanted to touch on a couple other kind of microphones because I get asked this occasionally. People will ask, if I'm going to be recording out on the go, if I'm going to be out in the wild recording some audio, maybe an interview, there's a few good options for that. And what I've actually been using for recording interviews with my camera, actually, I have a DSLR, and there's a little shotgun mic that will sit on top and plug into the DSLR, and it's called the Rode VideoMic Pro. And it doesn't have great sound quality, but it runs about $200, and it's a fairly easy setup. You can actually use them if you buy an adapter cable, and I'll put a link to that one in there. You can actually plug this microphone into your iPhone, and it works okay. It's not great, but that's an option, especially if you're going to be shooting interviews with a DSLR. Another good option for recording out on the go, if you're traveling, is the Zoom H4N, and this is just a little handheld device that has a microphone built into the top, and you also have two inputs if you want to plug other microphones into that. And so that's a lot of people use that if they're recording out in the field. If you need more than two inputs, you can upgrade to the Zoom H6, and that runs $400 new. And this has four microphone inputs in addition to the built-in stereo condenser mic that sits on top of the unit. So those are used a lot. They're great. They work really well. That's something to look at if you're going to be recording out in the world, just not in your bedroom. Also, one of the community members actually brought this up earlier, lav mics. And I'll be honest, I don't have a lot of experience with lav mics, but they're used commonly on stages. I think they're pretty good for recording interviews if you're out and about. And there's a couple I wanted to touch on. Sean uses the, and that's Sean McCabe of Sean West. I'm sure you're familiar. If not, get familiar. Sean uses the Rode Lavalier, and it runs about $249 new. And this mic sounds good. It's a good lav mic. It's not cheap, but if you're in a situation where you need a lav mic and you have a little bit of money, you want to sound good, then that's a good mic. One of the community members brought up the Rode SmartLav, and this is just a more affordable version, and it plugs into your iPhone. And I took a listen to the recording, and it sounded pretty good. It wasn't great, but it definitely could have been fixed up with a little bit of post-production. And for the price, it's about $80 new. It's a good deal. So if you need a lav mic, plug it into your iPhone. You could probably combine it with some kind of interface to record more than one, but I won't go into that right now. I'll do some more research. I'll touch on that in a future episode. I actually saw another system that I wanted to mention. I have no idea how good this setup is, but I saw this. It's called a GTD Audio Professional Wireless Microphone Mic System. And what it is, it's a box, and it's two wireless microphones that transmit to a transmitter box that you could plug into an interface, which goes into your computer. It runs $169. Like I said, I can't recommend it for audio quality, but if you're in a situation where you need two wireless handheld microphones, then that's something to look at. And I'll include links to all these things in the show notes, which can be found at thepodcastdude.com/2. So I've talked a little bit about microphones. I've covered all the ones that I recommend. And now I need to talk about interfaces. So if you go with a USB microphone, you don't need an audio interface. But if you're going to go with a more traditional microphone, you will need to get an audio interface. And most interfaces are USB powered. Some have additional power, especially if you have more than a couple microphone inputs or if you have phantom power. But there are a few that I really, really like. And the kind that you need to get really depends on what your needs are. So if you're just going to be recording yourself, you can get just one or two inputs and that'll be fine. If you need to record multiple co-hosts, if you're going to get a bunch of people into the room, you may need an interface with four inputs or eight inputs. And some of the older interfaces are FireWire. I know I started off with an M-Audio interface that was FireWire, so make sure that the interface you get is either USB, or if it is FireWire, make sure you actually have a FireWire port on your computer. I'm not super familiar with how many PCs have them. I know the older MacBooks do, but the newer MacBooks don't. So, and just another thing I wanted to touch on, I would go for 24-bit if you can, and I'm not going to explain what that means right now, but basically, you just get higher sound quality if you have a 24-bit interface. So look for that. Get it instead of the 16-bit interfaces if you can. Most newer interfaces will either be 24 or 32. So you'll want to record in 24-bit audio. And so the interface that I use and that I really like and I have experience with is the Scarlett 2i2. And these run about $149 new. They have two microphone inputs and, excuse me, sorry, I was just checking to see if they have phantom power. So, and yes, they do. And phantom power is power that is used to power. Wow, I just said that. Phantom power is used for condenser microphones. So condenser microphones, because they're more sensitive, they need additional power and most interfaces will provide it. But if you're going to use a condenser microphone, then you need to get an interface with phantom power. So the Scarlet 2x2 does have Phantom Power, and it is 149 new. I bought mine for, I think, $100 used. So that's a great starter if you're just going to record yourself or maybe one other person. It has two mic inputs. The step up from that is a Scarlet 18i6. And this has four microphone inputs. It runs about $350 new. You can get them used for cheaper. And I believe I'm going to be upgrading to that, or I'm going to be buying one of those, because it has two headphone monitoring jacks in it. So you can run two different headphones to it and give different mixes back to those. And that's important for streaming live if you want to send a mix minus back to a guest. I'll go into that in a future episode. But if you need more than one headphone output, you could also get actually a headphone amp. And I'll include a link to that. But moving on, if you need eight inputs, the Scarlet 18i20 is great. I had a friend that actually let me borrow one of these for a while, and it's a great sounding interface. They actually are all very high quality. All the Scarlets sound really good. Great value for the price. The 18i20 starts at $499 new. And I wanted to mention another interface, because this might be overkill for many of you, but if you have money to just spend, the Apollo Twin, I've heard, is a great, great sounding interface, very high quality, but it runs $899 new. $900, not cheap. If you're worried about money, this isn't the thing for you, but that's a great interface. I hope someday to be able to upgrade, because I would actually like to get back into recording music. Other things to consider for your setup is, if you go with an XLR microphone instead of a USB microphone, then you'll need to get an XLR cable to plug from the microphone into the interface. And I'll include a link in the show notes to a Monoprice 15-foot XLR cable. They run about $10, and that's what I use. They work really well. It's great value. I haven't had any problems with those. We used them in the band I was in previously for all our shows, and we never had any problems. Great microphone cables. All right, up next, we got stands. So you guys are going to need stands, right? You got to put the microphone on something. You're probably not going to want to hold it the entire time. I wouldn't recommend that. So there are a couple different stands you can get, and it really depends on your budget and what you're going to be using it for. So I use just a normal microphone boom stand. So this looks like any stand you would see on a stage. My Shure SM7B comes with a special microphone clip that you just screw it onto the end of the arm of the stand, and that's fine. If you use certain mics have different clips, they're mostly pretty standard, but like if you get an SM58, they don't generally come with clips, so you have to buy a little adapter to screw onto the microphone stand. Just something to be aware of. Most USB microphones either come with a little stand or come with a clip especially made for that microphone. So the boom stands I would recommend for most people. If you have a little bit more money, then I would invest in what's called a broadcast boom. And there are a couple different ones. The one that everyone seems to use and love, and sadly, I don't have one yet. I'm hoping to invest some money in it someday. But it's the Heil boom arm. And this is, if you can picture in your mind right now, just an arm that comes up. It attaches to a desk, and you can just move it around. It just swivels, and you can pull it up and down. And you can move it all around. They use either this or a variety of this in radio stations, and it's super convenient. It works really, really nice. But the good one, the Heil overhead broadcast boom, it's the Sound PL2T, runs about $120. So if you're just starting off and your money is tight, that's maybe not something you want to invest money in. But if you want to be fancy, go for it. I'm sure I'll upgrade to that at some point. But for right now, I'm just using a tripod style boom stand. There are other stands, and I actually want to tell you what I don't recommend. I don't recommend any stand that sits on your desk. And there's a couple of reasons for this, but the main one is that if you have a stand that sits on your desk and your microphone is on that stand, if you bump your desk, or if you're typing on your keyboard, clicking on your mouse, moving stuff around, the microphone is most likely going to pick up those vibrations. And there are shock mounts that you can buy for various microphones to absorb that and kind of help with that. But for most people, I haven't been doing a lot of typing, but let me show you real quick. I don't know if you can hear this. I may add a post. But if you're typing, not only are you going to hear, if your microphone is on a stand, which is on your desk, you're going to hear that clicking, but you're also going to get these little thumps. And that's just annoying for your listeners. That's not quality. That's not what you want. So I would avoid the desk stands if at all possible. The boom stands are great because you can put them next to your chair. You just have a lot of options. The arm can come out a lot. So I would go with the boom stand or the broadcast boom, the one that swivels around, if you can afford that. All right, moving on. I touched on pop filters earlier. Pop filters are one of those things that you really should just get. Just get it. Don't even think about it. I'm including a link to a Natty pop filter, which sells on Amazon for $10. And pop filters are important for a lot of reasons, but mainly they prevent plosives. And a plosive is where the air from your speech hits the microphone and causes a thump. If you may have heard a podcast where someone is not using a pop filter, and it's annoying, it's not great. It also lets you get closer to the microphone and filters out some of the breath and just lets you have kind of a more intimate sound and helps with sibilances. It's just a good idea. Just do it. Buy one. I don't know. They're like 10 bucks on Amazon. Just go get one. All right. And a couple other things I wanted to mention now that we've kind of gone over microphones and interfaces. I use a power conditioner, and a power conditioner basically a filter for your AC power. And sometimes, depending on the building you're in, depending on the house that you have, sometimes you can get noise introduced through your power supply. And this is just a kind of a long box that has a bunch of outlets, and you plug it into the wall, it cleans and filters the power. And then you can plug all your audio equipment, your computer, into that, and that'll fix some common hums or buzzes that you might get from plugging straight into the wall. So I use one of these. They run about $55 new, and it's just really nice. It's kind of just peace of mind, but it's actually really convenient because it's like having a power strip with, I think it's 8 different places you can plug into. And so if you're using just a little bit of gear, maybe it's not a big deal. But if you have a lot of rack equipment, preprocessors, stuff like that, if you're an audio nerd, you know what I'm talking about. If not, don't worry about it. But this is great. I would recommend getting one of those. It's 50 bucks. So, all right, preprocessors. Now, you may have heard about the DBX-286 before. And this is common with a lot of podcasters, actually. And the DBX-286 is a preamp, a compressor, a de-esser, and a noise gate. I guess I should explain that. I had a question about it earlier. Certain microphones, especially the Shure SM7B, require a lot of gain. And I'm not going to go into that right now because I'd like to prepare a whole episode about that and recording. Maybe that'll be the next episode. But your microphone basically needs power to pick up sound. And certain interfaces provide more gain than others, but a preamp is specifically made to provide enough gain for any microphone. The Shure SM7B is a gain hungry microphone. It needs something like 50 dBs of gain. And the interface that I'm using right now, the Focusrite Scarlett 2i2, actually doesn't have enough to properly power this microphone. It still works, but it doesn't sound as good as using a preamp. Yeah, and Sean in the chat room is saying at least 55 to 60 dB of gain would be nice. And the Scarlett 2i2 just doesn't have that because of the way it's made. Some of the bigger interfaces, I believe they do. But so I bought this preprocessor called a DBX-286. And this does a couple things. It provides more power to the microphone, so that's great. But it also has a compressor built into it, and you can kind of enhance. It has two knobs, at least the one that I do, has two knobs, one for low end and one for high end. So you can kind of enhance both the bass and the high end. And it has a de-esser, which will just control some of the sound. And if you're using a pop filter, that'll help as well. but it also has a noise gate. So every recording has a noise floor, and that's just the room sounds, that the ambient noises. So a noise gate will reduce that noise at a threshold that you set. And I'll cover that more later. But this, the DBX 286 runs about $200. If you want great sound, it's a good investment. It's not necessary at first, but if you want to spend a little bit more and get really, really good sound, then invest in a DBX 286. I recommend it. You'll need to spend a little bit of time getting familiar with it if you're not already familiar with all the various things that go along with a preprocessor. So, and also be aware that if you do get one of those, you're going to be plugging your microphone into that, but then you also have to run a cable out from your DBX into your interface. So I'll include a link to that cable in the show notes. And another thing to think about that I don't think a lot of people consider right away, but headphones. Headphones are really important for both recording and mixing. Now, the last thing you ever want to do is record a podcast without using headphones. If you're using the built-in speakers on your computer, your microphone's going to pick that up. It's going to cause an echo, and people are going to turn that off instantly. So you always have to wear some kind of headphones. Now, if you want to invest in some good headphones, the ones that I use and love, and a lot of people use and love, are the Sony MDR-7506 headphones. And I'm also going to talk about open back versus closed back. Now, most consumer headphones are generally closed back. And this just means that the speaker is encased. And that helps with recording. You don't get sound leakage. Open back headphones, like the name suggests, they have an open back. So it's kind of just a speaker floating in this container and sound escapes. And this is supposed to be better for mixing, but it will cause problems when you're recording because your microphone is going to pick up the sound coming out of those headphones. So for recording, it's recommended to use closed back. And the Sony MDR-7506 are closed back, run about $84. If you want to spend a little bit less, there's a lot of options for closed back headphones. The Sennheiser HD280, they run about $70. If you don't want to spend money on headphones that'll also work well for mixing, for listening to music, I actually use just Panasonic earbuds. And the name, if you just go to Amazon, I'll include a link in the show notes, but the name is like RPHJE120K, and you won't remember that. Doesn't matter. They run about $6, and they're very comfortable. They are in earbuds, and they come with a soft silicone tip, different sizes so you can adjust for your ear. But they work really well if you just want to use that for hearing yourself or hearing your guests when you record. Then those are fine. But if you want to invest in some good headphones, actually for listening even too, the Sony MDR-7506, I love listening to music on these headphones. They sound great. They're great for mixing. I carry them with me everywhere when I'm out and about listening to music, editing podcasts, doing mixing and mastering, all that stuff. They're great for the price. I would recommend those. So I think in the next episode, I'm going to touch on software, recording software, and things like that. But there are a few options. So after you get this gear, then you are going to need to record. And there's a few programs that you can do that in. If you have a Mac, QuickTime comes along with your included in your computer. So that's great. Easy to record all your tracks in that. You can use GarageBand. I think most Macs have GarageBand. Audacity is a good free option. Works on both Windows and Mac. And then if you're going to spend a little bit of money for a real digital audio workstation editing program, Reaper is a good cheap option. Last time I checked, it was $60, and it works on both Mac and Windows. I use and love Logic Pro X. Of course, there's also Pro Tools. Those are a little more for the audio professional, someone who's going to be doing a lot of recording and mixing and mastering and those kind of things. So they're not cheap. But if you're going to be doing this a lot, if you want to learn, like I said, I love Logic Pro X. And as far as recording Skype conversations, and a lot of people do this, and I don't recommend this method of recording podcasts, but sometimes that's what you got to do. That's how you got to start off. The better alternative, and what I tell people to do, is to have, if you're interviewing someone over Skype, have that person record on their computer if possible. That would be ideal. And then send you the audio file so you can put that along with yours and you record on your computer as well. So you both record and then you put them together in post. That's called a double ender. You can get better sound quality that way because Skype is unreliable. Skype often drops. You get artifacts. It's just not a good time. So, but there are a couple of programs. I've used Ecamm Call Recorder to record a Skype conversation before. And if you just Google Skype recording, you'll see a bunch of other ones. So, that's a lot of things. I'm going to go through and look for some questions real quick. Somebody had asked me earlier what setups I recommend. And this is what I tell people. If you just want to get started, the Blue Yeti with a pop filter is the minimum. I don't think you should go any cheaper than that. I also don't think you're going to get great sound with that setup, but you will be listenable and people are not going to turn your podcast off because it sounds like crap, assuming you set the input gain levels right and you record in a room that doesn't have a bunch of echo or background noise. It's not a great setup, but it'll get you started. That'll run you about $140. Now, if budget is a big deal and you really want to get into podcasting, you really want to do a podcast, you've got a lot of ideas for content, I would suggest maybe thinking about holding off on buying gear until you can afford something that you really, really want. And I don't think people like to hear that, but I think it would benefit you more in the long term if you waited 6 months, maybe picked up some jobs on the weekends, took on a little extra client work, saved some money. It's really important to make a good first impression. I was having a conversation with a client, a possible client the other day, and I actually compared microphones and sound quality to clothes. And this might sound weird, but if you think about it, when you first meet someone, You kind of look them over to see what they're about. And if you have a great microphone, it's similar to wearing well-fitting clothes that are stylish. It makes a good first impression. The alternative is a cheap microphone and a bad recording and it doesn't sound good. That's kind of like just wearing dirty, wrinkled, ill-fitting clothes. It's just not going to make a good impression with the people that are listening to you, the people that you meet. So I would say hold off. If you can't afford the setup you want right now, just hold off. You know, spend that time, make some money, save up, buy the good gear, buy the gear you want. And in the meantime, plan out your episodes, work on your website, learn some post-production stuff. There's tons and tons of free videos for all these things. It's just not going to serve you well, and it's not going to serve your listeners well if you just go with the very cheapest option. So, okay, another a setup that I really like, and I'll go over the setup that I have right now. So I've got the Shure SM7B. And this is the, I would call this the deluxe setup for individual podcasters. So if you're just going to be by yourself podcasting, maybe talking to someone over Skype, then this is the setup that I have here currently. And it is the Shure SM7B, just on a $20 boom mic. I've got a $10 pop filter. So right there, I got my microphone used. That was $250. And the stand through. So we're looking at $280 right now. And I paid about $100 for this Focusrite Scarlett 2i2. So we're sitting at $380. And $10 for the microphone cable. So I think you'd be looking at about $400 for a great setup. If you get it used, if you don't, right about $500. But this is great. Not only can I use this for podcasting, but I can also use it for screencasting and talking to people on Skype. I've been able to tell there's been a few times where I've talked to a person, a possible client over Skype, and they've been impressed with the way that I sound. It's just good. It just reflects good on you. I don't know what to say. I'll do a show about that, first impressions. But also, I'm using a DBX 286, which I also got used, and I paid $100 for it. And another $10 for the other cable that runs from the DBX to the Scarlett. So all in all, I think I've spent roughly $500 on the setup that I have right here. So buy used gear if money's an issue. All right. So Alice asked, that's hard, what is a good room for podcasting? A good room is a dead room. So that's not a great answer. But the point is that you want to record in a room that doesn't have a lot of bare walls and bare hard surfaces, because what happens is the sound from your voice will go and bounce off of those walls and the floor and the ceiling and come back into your microphone, and that's what causes echo. Also, background, you got to think about background noises. So things like refrigerator hums, fans, AC, heating, bulldogs walking around on fake hardwood floors, clicking. That happened to me one time. I was on an interview with a guy named Ian who does a podcast, and he was interviewing me as the podcast dude, and my bulldog was walking around and making these clicking sounds because of his toenails on the floor, and it all came through in the recording, and that was super embarrassing because I'm supposed to be the guy that has good audio quality, and that was So you have to be aware of the environment. And what I actually did for my spare bedroom was build these sound absorption panels, which are about 4 feet tall and 2 feet wide. And they're just wood frames, and they have sound absorbing insulation in them. So fiber, actually some like fiberglass insulation, and they just absorb some frequencies. I built 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There may be one on the wall behind me. 5 or 6. So Alice says a dead room is cozy and soft. Yeah, I don't know about cozy and soft, but there are other ways to absorb sound and to prevent sound from bouncing off of things and coming back. The most effective way from what I've learned is sound diffusion panels. And these are just these square or otherwise panels that have all these different surfaces built in a way so that when a sound wave hits it, it deflects it in all different directions. And those are great for diffusing, for breaking up sound and preventing echo and from sound waves from coming straight back and building up on themselves. So sound diffusion panels, you can use things like large couch cushions. I used to do this back in the day when I was recording with Sean. I would get some of these big, massive couch pillow cushion things and put them kind of up around me, because the room I was recording in, which is kind of a small dining room, it was very echoey, and I had a condenser mic. So yeah, like I said earlier, I wish I would have gone back and invested in a good mic right away, but you live and you learn. So as far as recommendations for soundproofing materials, yeah, if you go to like Sweetwater or Guitar Center, and you Google sound diffusion panels or sound absorption panels. Another thing I wanted to touch on, actually, now that I think about it, is bass traps are actually something that a lot of people overlook, and they can often be very useful for absorbing some of the lower frequencies that often bounce off walls and come back into the microphone. Bass traps are important. Sound diffusers are great. They're not cheap, though. So a lot of people recommend recording in a closet. This is actually a good idea. Or if you have one of those closets where it's just a door in your wall, and if you can pull this off, stand in front of all your clothes and record. Yeah, certain living rooms can be good if there's a lot of furniture. What I like to do is I walk in a room and I clap my hands. And if you listen, you can kind of hear how much echo is in the room. So I'll actually do that real quick. I don't know how this is going to sound. So this room is pretty dead. And so if you go into a room and you clap your hands and you don't hear the echo, if it just kind of dies, then that's a good room to record in. If you clap and you hear this pop, 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 that's not good. So recording in a closet, there are portable sound booths, which are just like these kind of 2 feet tall, couple feet wide and tall shields, basically, that have some foam inside them that prevent your voice from going past it. It just kind of deadens it a little bit. Those can work pretty well. I think they run about $100. So check that out. If you record a track and it sounds very, very echoey, then you'll need to do something. If that's the only room you can record in, you'll need to do something to treat the room for sound. So like I said, there are some options: big pillows, furniture, anything to kind of diffuse the sound. Bookshelves work well for that. Books, if you think about all the different, I don't know how to explain that, but bookshelves work well. All right, let me check another question here. I think I saw another one I wanted to get to. What is gain and how do you set it? My understanding and the way I think about it is, it's how much volume the microphone is picking up, or how much sound is going into the microphone. And you can control the sensitivity of the microphone by adjusting the gain. So right now, microphone technique plays into this, but right now I'm about 3 inches from the microphone and I'm talking at a pretty consistent volume. And I have my gain set in a way so that the input levels are hitting at about 12 dB below the ceiling, which is zero. So if you ever look at an audio meter, you'll see zero, and then you'll see -3, -6, -12. And that's just how much gain you have before you hit the ceiling of the recording. Before if you hit that zero, the track will clip. You'll get digital distortion. It does not sound good. So that's what you want to avoid. And I generally tell people to record to where the peaks, the very loudest parts of your speaking voice, hit about -12 when you're practicing good mic technique. As far as setting gain, some USB microphones come with a gain knob. So what you need to do is plug the USB microphone into your computer, open your recording software, and QuickTime. I don't like the meter on QuickTime. It's kind of hard to see how much gain you're actually getting because there are no numbers, and it's just kind of this, it's a horizontal meter. It's not easy to use. But if you open a program like Audacity or GarageBand and you select the microphone in there and you start recording, you'll see how much gain is coming in. And often gain meters generally look like that. There's a bar, usually vertical, sometimes horizontal. And when you're talking to the microphone, you'll see it move and you'll see it go up, and part of it will be green. And then as it gets higher and higher, it'll go yellow and then it'll go red. And so the red is getting close to clipping, getting close to distortion. You want to avoid that. I know in GarageBand, if you set it to where the louder parts of your averages are coming in right where green goes into yellow, that's a pretty safe spot. So if you get excited, if you want to talk louder, if you laugh loudly like I used to on the Sean West podcast, then you actually should back away so less volume is going into the microphone. And if you talk quieter, you can get a little bit closer. Yeah, laughing to the side. Sean McCabe said, gotta laugh to the side, and that's true. So I hope that helps. Like I said, I'll be getting into this a little bit more in the next episode. And Albert asked earlier, why a dynamic mic rather than a condenser? And I covered this at the beginning of the show, but I'll go over it again real quick. The short answer is, dynamic mics will pick up less room sounds. So they'll pick up less of the echo if you're in a room that isn't treated well. They tend to emphasize the mid-range, which is where the majority of the energy from your voice is in the frequency range. And I realize that probably doesn't make a lot of sense to many of you. Hopefully I can explain that in a future episode in some screencasts. But they'll make you sound warmer. They'll reject more of the sound that isn't directly in front of the microphone. Whereas condenser mics are more sensitive. They will pick up more detail, but that's not always a good thing, especially if you're in a noisy room. So you're going to get a lot more of the way the room sounds. So typically, and I'll talk about recording music here for a second. So typically if you're in a recording studio, the engineers will use dynamic mics for very loud instruments. So guitar amps, and this isn't always true, but a lot of the times you're using dynamic mics on guitar amps, loud vocals, drums, certain drums. The drums that you hit, the snare drum, the tom-toms, the bass drum. Most engineers will use condenser microphones for the overhead to pick up the whole sound of the kit, but they'll usually keep them 4, 5, 6 feet above the drums to pick up a general overall sound. But if you're going to be close to a microphone, you can use a condenser mic for podcasting, but it's just, I would recommend, if you don't have a room that's specifically treated or very, very dead, and if you're not familiar with setting gain levels, and everyone should have a pop filter regardless, but absolutely have to have a pop filter with a condenser microphone. For people just starting off, I think the dynamic mic you'll find will give you a better sound and it'll be easier to use. So that's why I recommend dynamic mics like the Shure SM7B, like I'm using, like Sean uses, and then the SM57 or 58, if you're on a budget. Those sell used online for about $50, which is a great value. They're good sounding microphones. They're not amazing, but they sound good. If you need a budget mic, that's the way to go. And this may be relevant to you or not, but dynamic mics are generally considered to be more durable, so they can take abuse. You know, if you're podcasting at home, you're probably not going to be beating your mic up, but who knows? Maybe you have kids. Long story short, I would recommend going with a dynamic mic. Let me check real quick to see if I know the Blue Yeti is a condenser, but I believe the Rode Podcaster USB microphone is a dynamic mic. Like I said, the Rode Podcaster is a pretty quality microphone. It's not amazing, but you'll definitely stand out if you use one of those instead of one of the cheaper microphones. Yeah, it is a dynamic mic. So, all right, possibly one more question, and then I'm going to wrap up. Okay, Kobe Almond asked, how do you avoid vocal clicks and smacks? Pop filters will help with a lot of that, but that's also just a speaking thing. So if you're in the habit of a lot, I know people that do this, it's just something you have to be aware of. And actually, I'm going to do a whole show on speech, because I was actually listening back to the previous episode 1, and I noticed some things that I did that I really don't like. So I would do this little sighing thing where I'd go, and I don't know why. It's just a habit I picked up a while back, I guess, but it was irritating. So I think I edited most of them out. But if you listen to yourself, if you record yourself and listen back and you listen critically, you'll hear things about the way that you talk that you can improve. Speaking is a skill. Like anything else, you can get better at it with deliberate practice. So that's something to be aware of. If you notice yourself smacking your lips a lot, or saying a lot, or just any number of bad habits that people pick up, or speech patterns, styles, think consciously about that when you're recording. And I'll post a link to a video that I really, really like. This video by Roger Love about speaking. He's a vocal coach who has worked with many, many, many stars, and he just has some really, really great thoughts and advice about how to become a better speaker. And if you're interested in podcasting, I would absolutely recommend you watch that 3 or 4 or 5 times. So I'll post that in the chat and in the show notes. And I think that's going to do it for today, guys. Thank you all for coming out. Thank you for listening. I wanted to mention, this podcast does not have sponsors, and it will not ever have sponsors, and that's made possible because I'm part of the Sean West community, part of the Sean West network, and the community is it's just an amazing place where all kinds of awesome people get together to talk about business and creativity and life and podcasting and shooting video and writing, and it's just really, really amazing. Go to seanwest.com/community to learn more about that. But they support the show, so we don't have to do sponsors. And I'm really, really grateful for everyone there showing up and talking to me, walking me through my very first live podcast by myself, doing a solo show. So that was fun. Also, if you want to help me out, if you want to help the show out, help other people find the show, head over to iTunes and rate and review. Type in podcastdude.com/iTunes, and that should give you a redirect. I really, really appreciate it. Also, if you have any questions, if I didn't cover something that you would like to know, shoot me an email at aaron@thepodcastdude.com. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to answer your questions. Hopefully, maybe I'll do an entire show if you have a topic that I like. But at the very least, I'd like to get to answering your questions on the show live. And you can learn more about me at thepodcastdude.com. And that'll do it for today. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you everyone in the live chat for hanging out. I will talk to you again soon. Justin said that he liked his Rode Podcaster, but the SM7B is in another league. Yeah, I can agree with that. You get a, you know, the great thing about the SM7B is that if you don't know a lot about post-production, you can just plug it in, set your gain levels, and you've got a great sounding recording. And you can make it even better if you know how to EQ and compress and all that stuff. But it's just a great mic, and it's only a little bit more than the other microphones. I mean, yeah, you got to buy an interface, but, you know, $200. I remember back when $200 was a lot of money for me. But I really think it's worth it for people who want to have a successful podcast. You know, if you don't care about building an audience and building relationships and doing well, then yeah, you know, just buy a $20 microphone. You know, honestly, ooh, that's another thing I wanted to stop saying, honestly. I realize I say honestly a lot. I'll start saying truly instead. Truly, if you just want to practice, if you just want to practice recording an episode just to see how you do, just to hear yourself talk, you can use your iPhone. You can use your built-in Apple earbuds. If you just want to practice, you can just use whatever you have handy, you know, and put it into a free program like GarageBand or Audacity, play around with it, practice. Oh man, now I'm thinking about the very first microphones I really ever used. I think the first time I ever tried to record music, I was using a Zoom Q1 or Q2, Q3 maybe, just this little handheld portable mic, and I recorded my mom playing some songs. So she's a guitarist, sort of kind of a songwriter. And I recorded it, got it into my computer, tried to do some post-production on it. And if I go back and listen to it now, I know it's going to be awful and there's so many things I could have done better. But there is an element of just practicing, just starting and getting familiar with the programs that you got to use, you know, what buttons you got to push, you know, EQ and compressor. Man, I learn new things about those every day, and I've been using those plugins every day for 2 years now. And there's always some new way, some better way to do things. So it's really honestly very complex, and you just need to get started. But if you're serious about podcasting, if you want to publish a show, I would recommend getting a great microphone before you do that. You can do some practicing as much as you need to be comfortable on a cheaper microphone. But when you're ready to publish, when you're ready to put something out into the world, when you've prepared the content, when you're doing it for real, I would say get a great mic. I think to answer the question that Justin asked last week, what's the single most common mistake people make when starting a new podcast? It is not investing enough in a good microphone.